You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic. I'm Cameron Lalana.
And I'm Matt Karasimovich.
And today we're covering part two, chapter 46 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate, zooming in from this kind of broad view we've had of the death camp as the arrivals, many of the people who we spent time with earlier in the novel on the cattle car are now shepherded from the square from which they have been looked through by the SS guards for workers of value to them. And the rest, the thousands of them left, are now being marched to the gas chamber unknowingly. Just keeps getting tougher. Is there anywhere here that you'd like to start?
Yeah, it kind of goes without saying, but it's clearly a very sad chapter. And a lot of the chapter is shown through David's perspective. David, the young Jewish boy that Sophia has become very attached to throughout the narrative. And just the sort of depiction of death from the point of view of a child, I think, really hammers home the really just the sadness, I mean, of the entire situation. And knowing that David is just one of many children that were executed is really, really terrifying and harrowing to read. And the way that death is discussed and personified in this chapter is really, it's just so pervasive. The narrator says death, it had become sociable, quite at home. It called on people without ceremony, coming into their yards and workshops, meeting a housewife at the market and taking her off together with her sack of potatoes, joining in children's games, peeping into a shop where some tailors were hurrying to finish a coat for the wife of a commissar, waiting in a bread queue, sitting down beside an old woman darning stockings. Death carried on in its own everyday manner, and people in theirs. And it just, I don't know, it was such a creative and kind of cheeky almost way to describe death, right? It's just almost another person sitting there alongside them. It's constantly there. Every action that is just these very everyday actions are accompanied by death always. And that's, I guess in some ways it always is there with us, but not quite in this way, right? It's not quite as overwhelming and pervasive, right?
And for such a dark chapter, I agree with you. There is great writing. I think some of the most beautiful writing we've seen in this whole book, and that is a high bar, mm-hmm. Comes in this chapter in these descriptions. And in that description of death, I think too, it's also much of this chapter is a reminder or maybe an assertion of the humanity of these people. Again, I feel like I've hit this note a billion times, but I think it is worth repeating again that when you talk about mass systems of death, it is so difficult not to then dehumanize the people who this machinery works to dehumanize, to not go along with that, right? Because it's difficult to even say such an, 100 million people, 100,000 people were murdered in this camp, for example, not the numbers, but without losing track of how much that really means. And Grossman does a lot of work to do that. And I think this is one of the finest moments of that, where it's not just, often you'll see this in the chapters where they're, kind of the narrator speaking directly at you, the reader, reminding you of what is lost in this, as we kind of jokingly call the chat Grossman GPT chapters, which it's funny that actually got brought up in the discussion channel today. So still on people's minds. And here it's done in so many small ways. And when Sophia Leventon looks back at the line, she sees, an old man holding his wife's hand. She sees, Rebecca Buchman holding her child. She sees a 14-year-old who has just turned that age. She sees the librarian who traded her bread ration for sugar. All these small moments, which are unimportant in a certain sense of it, but on another level are the most important thing. These are the things that make themselves up. And the most important thing is that we keep asserting the humanity of the people this happened to, because that was the last thing left available to the people in this age, is to maintain your humanity or to to do whatever you can to do that. And in, we find that in Sophia Levantin, and when she thinks of what the music unlocks for her, and that is the secret of her soul. And the narrator says, "You can carry away this sense of your life without having ever shared it with anyone. The miracle of a particular individual whose conscious and unconscious contain everything good and bad, everything funny, sweet, shameful, pitiful, timid, tender, uncertain, that has happened from childhood to old age, fused into the mysterious sense of an individual life." You just feel the immense loss that is about to happen. Not just the immense loss of numbers, but the immense loss of so many things, emotions which are not even described in this book, because how could you describe them? There are so many different people who experience these things that are lost forever, that are not written down, that maybe have no record at all, and it is just gone. Mm-hmm. And that is a very difficult thing to come to terms with.
Yeah, and then towards the end of the chapter, we get the relationship between Sophia and David, that kind of this maternal feeling that she has towards David, and this sort of tenderness that emerges. And it's, you know, we don't have to talk about it completely in this chapter, because it's a theme running through the next three or four chapters. And it is very interesting, again, when we talk about the kind of identity formation and reformation that Sophia goes through as a character in the book. So just something to kind of note. It's, you know, it hasn't first appeared here. It's been appearing, right? And it continues to. So it's a good chapter. It's one of those where, like you said, it's beautiful writing, but it is tragic, of course.
Yeah. And at the very end too, you know, I think it's also kind of, not that it rejects the tragedy, but again, in one way that kind of asserts the power of humanity. There's a moment at the end where one man in the line, you know, leaps forward and to punch guard in the face. And David thinks, David saw how clear, fierce, and splendid human eyes can be when, even for a fraction of a second, they sense freedom, which is, again, reassertion of what we've been talking about. But I also want to go to a comment from one of our readers, Dominique, who says, "There's something about getting one punch in before certain death that is both tragic and romantic at the same time. I've actually been thinking lately about how fighting to the death is always glamorized or looked on as heroic. The whole, it's better to go with a bang than a whimper. Not exactly sure why people like it so much, but I guess it's just been the brazen resistance. I guess it's just the brazen resistance to give in."
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, that's something we've seen throughout this novel, both allowed and also subverted, right? I think in this chapter, I think I misunderstood Dominic's point initially, because I was thinking about House 6/1, where you do have moments when that last stand is taken away from us, because that's not always how war works. But there's the assertion that can happen, that reassertion of one's humanity to, frankly, a useless end. But it doesn't matter if it's useful or useless. Maybe Ikhonikov is right, that it's only important in such a time that you do it. Right. I mean, we see it, and David does this on the whole kind of a useless act. He's got a chrysalis in a box in his pocket. And even though he has the clarity that they're about to die that the adults don't have, he still chooses to save the life. And, you know, of course, you can look at that and it costs him nothing to save that life, but it also would have cost him nothing to do nothing about it. And even though the chrysalis is the least among them, he still asserts his essential humanity, which is this very empathetic soul to save any life if you can, even if it doesn't mean anything in the whole. You can choose to do that. That's freedom.
Yeah, and this is just a separate point that you touched on that I thought was interesting. The way that David is really the only one in the group that we're exposed to that seems to understand what's happening. The way that the adults kind of sort of try to almost like rationalize what's happening, as in, oh, they wouldn't really kill us, right? And I think there's a little bit of an understanding as we get further that that's what's happening, but there's also that kind of desperate hope that maybe that's not what's really happening. And for David, I think it is really immediately clear that that is what's happening. There's very little uncertainty. He's quite certain that that is what's happening.
Yeah, somewhere in the novel, Grossman calls the clarity of children and seeing, or the clarity of seeing death for what it is something that's mostly found in children and especially clear-minded philosophers. I think that's something that we see continuously throughout not only this novel, but a lot of his other work, that kind of almost simple-mindedness tends to see through a lot of other distortions that quote-unquote adult minds try to rationalize away because they've gotten so used to life as it is.
Yeah, like so used to life and the idea that, you know, surely somebody wouldn't try to change the status quo. It's kind of almost unfathomable in a lot of ways, as adults, and it clearly is just not what's going on, and David is very perceptive in that way.
Yeah, every one of these chapters, I feel like there's so many points we could talk about, but we're just kind of limited by the time. So, and I think in the interest of some of these things, we've covered in our larger episodes. So take a look back at that if you're interested. Mm-hmm. But other than that, is there anything else you think is really essential to cover today?
Well, there's a ton of things that we could cover today, but I think we've hit the main gist, the main thrust of the chapter.
And if you think we missed something, drop it in the Discord. We're happy to hear it.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk more about it. I do. Believe me.
That's why we do this project.
Exactly. But in that case, I think that we've kind of wrapped it all up. So I think you will be hearing from us again soon.